Welcome back to This Person I Met. You might notice something new in this episode, or someone new. As you all may know, Maya, the host of this podcast, is off to college, and that means someone new has to take over. My name is Kayla, and I, coincidentally, am her younger sister. For the next few years, I will be the new podcast host, and I am beyond excited to share my experiences with you all.
My father was a alcoholic, was abusive. My mother, she was diagnosed with schizophrenia when I was 5. So for me, I grew up quick. I have a younger brother and a younger sister, and I was basically their mom from 5 years until I moved out at 18. My son had passed in my care. They kind of pinpointed me as a very monstrous type individual, where that wasn't actually the circumstances. Second degree murder, 17 to 30 years, and I did a total of 20.
The voice you just heard was Jennifer St. John, the social media manager and trauma-informed peer-led reentry navigator of A Brighter Way. From previous episodes, you may remember A Brighter Way as a nonprofit dedicated to helping those previously incarcerated build a better, stable life. In this episode, Jennifer shares her journey battling her trauma and finding herself again through all of it.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Jennifer St. John. I work at A Brighter Way, and I am the programs manager and social media. I write. I'm a published poet. Poetry has been something that I've always found as like an outlet.
Coping mechanism.
Yeah. And I love coloring still to this day. The smell of crayons.
Yeah. Art is a really good outlet. I think I find that it's a good way to express myself too.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite memories from your childhood?
I don't really have many favorites. I think the one that I recall the most is I was probably about 12, and my brother's about 2.5 years younger than me, and my sister was 5 years younger than me. So my brother and sister woke up in the middle of the night, and it was Christmas. It was Christmas Eve, and I heard them wrestling with the presents that, Santa had left under the tree. And so I went in the living room and it's like, you guys need to go to bed. And they're like, but Jennifer, Santa came already. And I'm like, okay, but you guys got to go to bed. Well, can we at least look at a few? And I said, okay. So what we did was I let them carry one of the presents to the microwave light in the kitchen, because then you could read, because this way no light's on and my dad couldn't hear us.
Yeah.
And so they read it and they were like, oh, this one's mine. Or, Jen, this one's yours. Or Rose, this one's yours. That was my favorite, because I let him be a kid for that moment. So
yeah, that's beautiful.
yeah.
Do your siblings still play a big role in your life?
Not as much as I would like them to. But it's no longer as strained as it was, so
Yeah, that's good.
yeah. It's funny because when I was sentenced, my dad made a statement to me. And he said, if this happened to your brother and sister, they wouldn't be able to survive it. And I didn't know what that meant at that time until after he passed and when I, grew up a little bit. And I realized that he was right. That because of the childhood that I was given and the circumstances that was put on me and the responsibilities that I had, that my brother and sister probably couldn't survive what I survived.
And to add on to that, if comfortable, what was your sentencing?
Oh, second degree murder, 17 to 30 years, and I did a total of 20.
How did your time incarcerated change your mindset?
So my incarceration was a little different. My son had passed in my care. And circumstances of who my ex-husband's father was, he was part of the police department. They kind of pinpointed me as a very monstrous type individual, where that wasn't actually the circumstances. Mm-hmm. So I ended up pleading no contest to second degree. The first 10 years I tried to commit suicide. I'm sorry. I didn't feel like living. It wasn't until the last time that I swallowed a bunch of my medication that I woke up and I felt my son's hand on my heart where he always rested it when he was sleeping. And I realized then that in the spiritual realm of how suicide is, and with my beliefs that if I continued and if I succeeded, I would never see him again. Mm-hmm. So I made a choice to stop. And ultimately, after that education, I found the one thing that I knew the world couldn't take from me.
Education?
Mm-hmm. Because they couldn't tell me to stop learning.
Yeah.
They couldn't tell me to stop putting fuel in my brain and learn things. So I just educated myself, and I walked out with almost 3 degrees.
Dang.
So.
What are your degrees?
I have an associate's in arts, a general associate's, and then I'm probably like 60 or 70s shy from a social work.
That's amazing. So, how do you accomplish like getting your education while incarcerated?
You fill out a FAFSA just like you would, you know, on the outside. And then they offer for the women's facility. So when I first was incarcerated, 2005, they offered U of M and EMU courses. Mm-hmm. However, when we went to Scott's, which is now the only, or when we were at Scott's, those were the two. Now, Women's Huron Valley is the only women's prison in Michigan, and they only do Jackson College. So,
so it's like a program connected to colleges?
Yep, and then you sign up. So it's generally your choice if you want to go in.
Mm-hmm. What are some challenges you faced reentering society?
So my re-entry in society was extremely difficult. I was put in a transitional home on the east side of Detroit with the situation and circumstances were worse than prison. When I tell you the house was falling apart and the people in it, they smoked. I have since living in that house acquired asthma, which I've never had in my entire life. And they stole, and they were using drugs. Uh-huh. 6 months after I got released, so I got released during COVID, my parole officer came to the house and visited to do a check-in, and I told her she can send me back to prison. And she said, I'm not gonna do that. And I said, no, really, you can. Like, I'd rather go back to prison than be in this house any longer. And she said, well, you're not going to be here forever. But, you know, it is what it is. And unless you do another crime, then I'm not sending you back.
Okay.
So I'm a woman that's resilient. And I was taking a bus 3 or 4 hours before I had to be to work to take a bus and not get home until probably 3 or 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. I worked in Hamtramck, which is one of the worst areas. Walked a mile just to get to work after the bus route. Mm-hmm. And I did not get home until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my God.
And I'm walking down dark streets that many grown men would not walk down. Mm-hmm. My coworker makes that statement every day. That he would have not walked down there. But I did, because that was part of my parole conditions, was to maintain a job. And I knew if I didn't have a job or employment, I wouldn't get out of that house. So, unfortunately, I stayed in that house until my parole was up.
What do you think were your, like, biggest motivators to, like, push through that time?
Well, one was the fact she wasn't going to send me back to prison, so I knew I didn't have any other alternative choices. It just was what it was. It was resilience. Like, I just knew that, okay, this is what I have to do. And I was like, well, being 20 years in prison, so why can't I do 2 years in this house? Mind over matter. And what happened was, I generally left the house early and stayed gone until I had to return.
Dang. And adding on to that, what do you think we as a society can do to support people returning from incarceration?
I think the big thing is just, like, to allow grace. Mm-hmm. Because people don't realize that, like, for me especially, when I talk about what happened in my case, it wasn't something that I did intentionally. It wasn't something that I foreseen or planned or something like that. Like, circumstances were different.
Mm-hmm.
And just because there's a charge behind the individual, it doesn't mean that that charge defies that whole person.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it is a wrong choice, for that matter. And I think another thing is the social, like, stigmas on people that are incarcerated coming out. Like, let's just set the record straight. We are one of the hardest workers for any job. So the fact that, like, people, like, look at us and be like, oh, you were in prison for such a long time, I'm not going to hire you, is, we're your best workers. Because that person that calls in sick or doesn't show up on time, like, we're showing up when you call us, when you need somebody. If you need us an hour or so early, we're going to figure out how to get there. Like, people just don't understand, like, we just have a different mindset than most people have.
Mm-hmm. What are some goals you're working for right now?
Currently right now, so, like, one of my biggest goals, I think for me, I can do this on, like, two levels. Like, professionally speaking, like, my goals are to just become better at my job. I'm actually moving to Lansing in, like, a month for a job opportunity with A Brighter Way. Where I would be, like, the head of an office.
Wow.
In Lansing, which is, like, just goes to show that, like, keep doing what you're doing, eventually, mm-hmm. you know, you'll move up. But I think for me, a lot of my goals right now are just allowing myself grace and learning how to deal with issues that I still have because of some of my trauma. So I think, you know, for me, like, personally, getting to know me better and knowing that, like, I'm not my past and I'm not my old traumas and stuff like that, like, just to become, like, a better version of myself every day.
Mm-hmm. Can you briefly describe the role you play in A Brighter Way?
Yeah, so I, like Johnny, am a peer navigator. Mostly for women, because our rule is generally females work with females, males work with males. And for me, it's something so much deeper, because, like, if I had something like A Brighter Way when I got out of prison, mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't have asked my parole officer 6 months after to put me back into prison.
Gosh.
So, like, me working with women who are, like, where I was, and to be able to, like, give them better, like, avenues and things, like, services that, you know, other organizations help with or we can help with and stuff like that. Like, just to just to know, like, it's going to take a lot more than a day. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take a lot more than the years that you put in. But eventually, changing your mindset and just giving yourself grace and understanding, like, even though 10 jobs say no, eventually there's going to be that one that'll say, yeah, we'll take you.
How long do you think it took for you to, like, reach that state where you kind of, how do I say it? Like, you found that space of healing.
I'm going to be honest, I'm still finding it.
Yeah.
Because I think for me personally, and mostly probably for even other individuals, I think it's difficult for those individuals that are incarcerated to get out of that mindset that you're not somebody, that you don't deserve good things, that you are your past. I think for me, it's a struggle every day. Mm-hmm. And especially because of my circumstances, what led me to prison, like, I still battle. Is this real? Am I really out here? Why aren't I still inside with, you know, because some people that are still inside are more my family than my own family.
Yeah.
So I still struggle with that. I think it just depends on the individual, how long that takes.
Healing is, like, so hard, especially, like, under your circumstances.
Yeah, because April will be 4 years since I've been out.
4 years? Yep. How long were you in there?
I was in there for 20.
It's only a fifth.
Yeah.
Very strong.
Yeah.
Why does A Brighter Ways cause matter to you?
It matters to me because it's peer-led. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times for individuals that are formerly incarcerated or even justice impacted, you're so used to being put in a space where MDOC or jail is trying to tell you something, and it's like, you don't understand. You haven't gone through it. Mm-hmm. Like, how would you know? And then, like, for an example, like, when we're released from prison, we get this, like, sheet of paper that, like, states certain places that'll hire you. I think the sheet that they gave me, the sheet was from, like, 2009, and I was released in 21. And for two, like, nobody on there hired. Like, and that's the great thing about A Brighter Way is, like, we vet people. We call them. We ask them, who are you willing to take? If they say, well, this person, but not, you know, like, they're not going to hire somebody maybe that robbed a bank or something to be a cashier. But, you know, and these are questions that we ask. Like, so we vet them. So this way, our motto is do no harm. Because I'm not about to send somebody somewhere where they're going to get a no. Mm-hmm. And then we're back to square one. And then that's them less likely to keep believing in themselves or even the system.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is, like, the largest issue with the prison system?
With the prison system?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot.
You think that locking people up is rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And it's not. Rehabilitation is... with me, with Johnny, with all the people that I work with, we all made choices during our time to have a different mindset, to work on us, to figure out what our issues were with certain crowds or substances or mental health issues or whatever it was. Like, we made that choice to dig ourselves, look in the mirror and be like, okay, how can I become a better version of me every day? Mm-hmm. MDOC didn't do that. Screaming at it, for one, let me just say this too, because I work in an office filled with a bunch of men, and these men are more compassionate than I am at most times. Because in a female facility, they dehumanize you to the point where you're not even a woman anymore. The way that these people talk to you, the way that they strip search you, the way that they... Like, for an example, I got a sexual misconduct one time because my friend lost her father. And I went to hug her. And I got a ticket. I got a ticket that was on my record and still is on my record. Why? I'm doing exactly what a human does. I'm comforting, I'm consoling. And then the women's facility, no. It is more difficult for me to be around people, especially men, in places and spaces sometimes because of the way that they treat me. Like, I don't even like to be touched 90% of the time. Because I still have traumas and triggers from things that happened to me in prison. And I just feel like, no, MDOC's got it all wrong.
And one final question. If you could say anything to, like, the youth of this time, what would it be?
Don't grow up too fast. Enjoy being a kid. Go outside, play in the mud, ride your bike, explore things, get out of the house, make friends, fall down and get back up. Like, just don't rush it, because you got the rest of your life to be an adult. And let me tell you, sometimes adulting is not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah.
So just have fun. Just have fun.